Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Car Talk Plaza Southern Winter Resort here on the beach. That's Carson Beach in South Boston.
That's not far south enough. I told Dougie this was a dumb idea to go build an entire resort here in South Boston. It's cold in South Boston. We should have gone further south.
Oh, I do remember that you were talking about Rhode Island or something, right?
That's it. What's wrong with Rhode Island?
I got a cute letter. Want to hear a cute letter?
Yes.
Dear Tom and Ray, being the devout historians that you are, I was surprised at the answer you gave. You gave a couple of weeks ago regarding the meaning of primitive four-wheel drive. Did we give a definition of primitive four-wheel drive? I remember someone said something about primitive. You said it dates back to World War II. I don't remember this either.
No, probably World War I.
But it actually had its origins
Spanish-American
much
War.
Earlier in the days of the covered wagons. When the pioneers made their great trek across the plains in their prairie schooners, the wheels were often mired in the well-worn ruts of the road.
Of course.
Oxen and horse would strain, but the wagon wouldn't budge. At this point, men would position themselves at each of the four wheels and shin deep in the mud. They would grasp the spokes and push for all they were worth. This is primitive four-wheel drive. Also, as the wagon was freed, the men at the front wheels had to stay out of the way of the protruding hubs on the rear wheels. So the men at the back would yell, "Look out for the hubs." And while these early four-wheel drives did not have lockout hubs, they did have hub lookouts. There are wackos. This particular wacko is named Jay Patterson from New Albany, Indiana.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Parker from Northampton.
Hi, Parker.
Parker.
Hi.
Where are you from?
I'm from Northampton, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I know where that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's up?
So I got this 1967 Chevy Nova station wagon.
Oh.
And I got it from this guy for $223. And so it basically...
$223. What was it?
It was $225, but I talked him down.
Oh, you chiseled him down.
So,
well, that's the equivalent, actually, of getting them to knock off a few $100s or a few thousand.
On a real car.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, you did great.
Yeah. Well, so it's given me lots of problems, but I've managed to figure out most of them. But one time when I actually had to bring it to someone who knew more about it than I did, this mechanic told me that there was something like a broken rocker arm or something like that in the engine.
Yeah.
And he said that there was no way for it to be repaired or like disengaged so the engine could run on the rest of the cylinders or whatever. And he said that it's going to end up destroying itself, like in a violent, ugly death. It's gonna put a hole through the side of the engine and gonna like destroy itself. And I just wonder if when my car dies, is it going to take me with it? Is this going to be like a dangerous accident? That's
this is a six cylinder. This has a six cylinder engine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but this
you
has,
sure he said broken rocker arm?
I'm pretty sure. I'm not positive. But there's like a loud ticking sometimes. Well,
yeah, I suspect you have a collapsed lifter.
Yeah, but I mean, a broken rocker arm is not going to throw itself through the side of the engine, nor is a collapsed lifter.
How about a broken connecting rod? Does that sound better?
That might have been it.
Ah, there you go. Okay, no, because a rocker arm costs about $10, and it's trivial to replace.
Yeah, he would have fixed that.
Yeah, okay, well, then that must not
This was something that was very expensive to repair, right?
Yeah, he said the only way around it would be to get a new engine.
Yeah, connecting rod.
And he said, like, it's going to put a hole through itself. And so I've been driving this car around all the time, you know, and I've gone, like, on the turnpike and everything.
Oh,
you fool.
Yeah, see, that's what I wonder. Am I being a foolish, naive, you know, is this another bad decision made in my youth?
All of those things. In fact, you may be a moron. No, this is going to really be this is going to be quite an exciting thing when it happens.
Okay, that's what
and
I was
the truth
wondering
is,
about.
I don't think you want to miss it.
Yeah.
I have almost experienced this.
Uh-huh.
I didn't throw a rod, but you should pardon the expression, sucked a valve.
Wow.
And the same thing happens. The engine immediately stops.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, immediately, just about as immediately as anything can happen. 1 second, the engine's going, and then boom, it stops and it makes a lot of noises.
Yeah.
And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
But you probably won't get hurt unless, of course, you happen to be just pulling away from that semi that's coming down the highway and you're just crossing in front of it.
Or you're cutting off a semi.
Yeah.
Right.
Then you sure you could get hurt.
Right.
But, I mean, that could happen by running out of gas. I mean,
yeah.
That could happen with
right.
all
that,
kinds of things.
That would be an indirect result of the engine failing.
Exactly. But right. not as a direct result of the engine failing are you going to die.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, just as my brother enjoyed sucking his valve, I think.
Well, you know, this is this reminds me of my father-in-law's theory of life and death.
Which father-in-law? 1, 2, 3?
Father-in-law number 3.
Oh.
Father-in-law number 3 says, I mean, people have been telling him for like maybe 50, 60 years that he's overweight. And his theory is it's better to be overweight. He said, because us big guys, we don't linger. We get a heart attack and boom.
Or a cerebral hemorrhage or something like that.
He said, we're gone in a second. Just like throwing a rod.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The way you want to go.
He said other people, they do the jogging and they watch their diets. He said, and pretty soon they're lying in the hospital dying of nothing.
Yeah.
And they linger and they linger.
Well, of course, you must linger by definition because there's nothing wrong with you.
There's nothing wrong with you. So you get all these horrible diseases sooner or later, and all your family has to worry about you, come to visit you in the hospital. He says, when I go, but they're not even going to know it. Bingo. Gone.
I can see the bumper sticking out. Eat heavy. Don't live long enough to get sick.
don't live long enough to get a horrible disease. And he's right. He's a brilliant man, that father-in-law number three.
Parker, don't linger. Go out and drive this thing at 80.
All right. <Yeah. laughs>
Let us know what it sounds like. See you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. No,
65. 65 is the speed limit in Northampton.
Oh, right.
Route 2.
Well, he can drive 80 for a few seconds. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Melanie Hamblin calling from Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
Hi, Melanie.
No last names, please, Melanie.
We forgot it already, but Shepherdstown, West Virginia. What's up, Melanie?
Hey, I have a Chevy Impala 2002, Chevy Impala with about 104,000 plus miles on it.
Good. 104.
Yeah, and it's been going through a lot of oil recently.
When you say going through a lot,
what's
yeah,
a lot?
Yeah, like, okay, I had been kind of took it to a Jiffy Lube last time, and they filled it up, and as it goes, I never check the stick to make sure they fill it, so I take their word for it. But, yeah, after about 400 miles, my car light came on telling me I was low on oil, and I went to check it, and sure enough, it was just the very tip was wet.
And this that was the first time it had happened?
No, well, it had started going like only 3,000 miles between oil changes when the light would come on, and it used to be that I could go 5,000-6,000 miles and the light would never even come on, and now it just seems to be getting less and less, but this last time it was like 400 miles, and then and they did check things over and said it wasn't leaking, and I can verify that my garage does not have any leakage in it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, that's not necessarily the definitive test.
And then
you could have a leak that's only leaking when you're driving. You know, so but you would probably see something on your garage floor if you parked in the same spot all the time. You'd mm-hmm. see something. So we're going to assume it's not leaking,
right.
And you're
okay.
burning it.
But have you seen smoke yeah. coming out the tailpipe?
I have not, and I've never smelled anything either.
You wouldn't.
Yeah, not
because
if this...
you're going that way and the smoke's going the
yeah.
other way.
Right. If you start backing up a lot, you'll see the smoke.
Good point.
Yeah.
No, but you need. I think you mentioned early on in the call, Melody, that you could go before all this transpired. You could go 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 miles before the low oil light came on.
Well, yeah.
So you would typically drive it until you needed oil. So
yeah.
that low oil light came on.
yeah.
Yeah, she's laughing.
Well, I'm kind of forgetful, but.
Well, you're not gonna be laughing when it costs you $6,000 to rebuild the engine, because that's what you need, I think.
Really? A rebuilt engine?
Well, yeah, because you have, by running it low on oil and going way too long between oil changes, mm-hmm. and when you say 6,000-7,000 miles, there might have been a couple in there that were 8, 9, or 10, maybe, I'm guessing.
No, it never went that far.
Yeah, so
nine?
You're not supposed to change the oil only when the light comes on, because the light is telling you this is an emergency.
Oh.
And what's happening when the light is on is if the engine holds 5 quarts of oil, and it's down 2 quarts, which is what it is when you can barely see that little something on the end of the stick.
Yeah.
You're asking those 3 quarts of oil to lubricate the engine when, in fact, it usually uses 5. So that oil's getting overworked and overheated and over-dirty, and as such, it allows the engine to get worn out faster.
Okay.
I mean, not that it can't be fixed, but what you need now probably is something called a ring job.
So my husband's been saying, we'll pour oil into it for the next year and then buy a new car.
Are you responsible for this? Have you done most of the driving on this car, or is there any way we can blame most of this on your husband?
It's me.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
So this is your...
Then it's between you and us, and we'll never say anything to
anybody. So this is your car and not a shared car between you and your husband?
Yeah, there have been times when we've gone back and forth, but mostly me.
But you've been responsible for the care and maintenance of it?
Correct.
And he's responsible for the care and maintenance of his car?
Correct.
Does he change his oil more often than you?
He goes 10,000 miles, but he has a Jetta TDI.
Oh, he's doing the same thing to his.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, you'll be needing 2 cars. How many miles are on his Jetta?
Oh, my gosh, about 80.
Oh, jeez, what a shame this is.
I know it. Well, you know what?
It's a brand new car almost.
The automotive industry is really undergoing a slump.
Oh, and they need you.
And they need someone to boost sales.
A few hundred thousand more people like you.
I expect you and your husband to get an award. See you, Melanie.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
Wait, did we give her advice?
Yeah, we told her she needed a couple of new cars and a new engine. And I mean, the truth is, she can continue to add oil and then she'll trade it. And, you know, lots of people do this. None of our customers, of course, but... because we have them well-educated. 888
Well, I mean, we should make it clear to the rest of the world that what...
Or at least the five people who are listening right now.
At least the 5 people who are listening, that Melanie did a terrible thing. I mean, you don't wait till the light comes on before you do something about something.
No, when the light comes on, it means that you haven't got sufficient oil pressure, and you are damaging all those internal parts of the engine that rely on that oil to save them.
Yeah,
you know,
the
rings, the bearings, and the like.
And if you're the kind of person who waits until that light comes on, you probably don't do anything when the light comes on. You wait a couple of days or a week or a couple of weeks,
during which
time you've destroyed the engine.
But the nice thing about it is that light is a nice reminder. When you see it, when you see that oil light, you know... Staring you in the face every day, it reminds you that you need the oil change. I think it's a wonderful thing. 888-CAR-TALK.
Oh, man.
888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. Rich from New Jersey.
Hey, Rich. What's shaking, baby?
I've got a 93 Ford Explorer. Mm-hmm. And the color is tourmaline, by the way, just in case you're interested in that.
Tourmaline?
Tourmaline.
What is that? I mean, what is that, like blue?
It's greenish, bluish.
Yeah, it's like aquamarine. But
when I went to buy the touch-up paint for the car, I was advised that the color of my car was indeed tourmaline.
Tourmaline. Oh.
I told them green, and shame on me for not knowing it was tourmaline.
Shame on you. Shame on you.
Recently, it's been unseasonably cold up here in New Jersey, and I've noticed that while driving to work, and I'm about 10 miles from work, and probably driving about 45 miles an hour.
I know the answer already. You can go ahead and ask a question, but you want to just jump right to the answer?
You don't even know what the question is.
The answer is that he has a bad thermostat.
I didn't know it was a Carnac thing. Okay. If we're doing Carnac.
Okay.
That's the answer.
It's a bad thermostat.
I'm sticking with it.
All right. Go ahead. Continue, Rich.
The question is the temperature indicator barely gets above... indicating cold.
I mean,
and it barely moving into the normal range.
Well, I'm going to tell you the basis for my answer.
You know what you need? You need a new thermostat.
And I'm going to tell you the basis.
My wacko brother was right.
I'm going to tell you the basis for my answer. In the last, I would say, 3 weeks.
Don't give away your secrets, man.
Oh, you have to.
Don't give away your secrets. Everyone thinks you're a genius. You tell us how you knew.
No, anyone that's ever, met me would know. In the last 3 or 4 weeks at the garage, we have had the good fortune to service many Ford Explorers.
Really?
And every one of them has needed a new thermostat. Many have come in because they didn't have sufficient heat, or they just came in for regular maintenance, and we noticed that the gauge was buried on cold.
Really?
Right.
And every one of them.
Running cold.
They're all running cold, and every one of them got a new thermostat.
Well, the odd thing with this one is that I am getting heat out.
Yes.
So I didn't, you know, it's not a great amount of heat, but it's enough heat to keep me warm for the 10 miles.
Because that vehicle has a very large heater core, and even though your thermostat is kaput, the heater core is probably enough to keep you reasonably warm. If you were in Maine... you'd be dead now.
I'd be in trouble.
Yeah. So you're getting an awful lot of low temperature heat, whereas you should be getting an awful lot of high temperature heat, and you're not.
All right.
Because the thermostat is stuck open.
Okay.
And if it weren't for global warming and what do they call that? The alignment of the planets and
right.
all that.
And the ozone
freezing.
Effect.
The ozone layer.
And the
right.
greenhouse effect and all
right.
of those
conjunction
effects.
Conjunction right. of the planets.
Yeah.
Well, I had stacked up some kindling on the passenger seat. I was ready to use it.
I would go for the thermostat solution. It may be a little neater.
That's a little bit better. I think you're probably right. I appreciate that.
Hey, good luck,
Thanks
Richard.
A lot, guys.
See you later.
Bye.
Take care.
All right, look, it's time for us to take a short break and then come back and, of course, answer last week's puzzler.
Yes, and I have it on good authority that your answer is going to be somewhat controversial.
That's all right. I can deal with answers that are controversial, you know.
Yeah. It's the totally bogus ones that ruin your week.
they do that, that's for sure.
Well, we'll be back with my brother's answer, whatever it is, and we'll take more of your car questions in about a minute, so please stay tuned.
Truck driving buddy, looking blue. You want to talk, boy, I'll talk to you. Bet I know what's on your mind. Sweet gal waiting for you down the line. Well, last time I seen you standing by, do you think I knew what was sitting in your eye? It gets rough, think you're losing your mind. Long, long road don't ever seem to unwind. You want to holler at every truck stop. You want to cry at every lonely jukebox. Sitting thinking coffee's cold. Well, truck driving buddy, let's hit the road.
And even though space aliens add us to their list of humanoids not to abduct whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
Go, man.
A longtime customer named Pell Osborne was at the shop a few days ago, and he brought his young son, William, along. And while we discussed Pell's car, William found a sign that had been hanging up in the shop for like 20 years, and he pointed out to me that it had a punctuation mistake. He said, "That sign's not correct, mister." I was embarrassed, but his dad explained that his son was a bit of a pain in the butt and made a hobby of finding grammatical punctuation or spelling mistakes and pointing them out. So I took the kid in the corner and dunked him in the used oil barrel and forced him to give me a puzzler. And this is a word puzzler. Here it is. I'm going to read three sentences, and there's a mistake in one of them. And I'm going to try to read them as clearly as I possibly can, all right? Sentence number one.
Yeah.
A recent space shuttle mission almost ended in disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Number two. While the shuttle and the International Space Station were engaged in their docking operation, the two crafts almost collided.
Mm-hmm.
Number three. A quick-thinking crew member saved the day.
Yeah.
All right, got it?
Yeah, so which one of them has a grammatical error?
Well, sentence number two has the mistake. I'll read the sentence.
Yeah.
Again, while the shuttle and the International Space Station were engaged in their docking operation, the two crafts, the plural of craft
is
craft. There's no S on the end unless you're at an art and crafts show. So who's our winner?
The winner this week is the Reverend. Wow. The Reverend James D. Richardson. What a nice name, from El Paso, Texas, and for having his answer selected at random from the compost pile of correct answers that we got. Reverend Richardson will get a $25 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, and with that gift certificate, the good Reverend can get our music CD, Car Talk Cartoons, the Car Talk Compendium of Disrespectful Car Songs, which has proven to be an excellent three-stage podium leveler.
I got a feeling that the choir is going to be singing those songs for a couple of weeks.
I mean, you just think, you're standing up there and you're delivering your sermon for the day and the podium starts to wobble. You pull out this thing and you can either put the whole jewel case under it Or you can just put the CD under it.
Right.
Or you can put the CD on top of the case. So you got three different levels of correction using this.
Jeez.
Wow. What a deal.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show. I have not yet decided what the puzzle will be, so I can't even give a description. It's just so agonizing coming up with a...
Will it involve a dimly lit Quonset hut?
I'm afraid not. I'm afraid not, but it might...
It might get any better than that, be good.
And you never can tell, so hang around. And right now, anyway, if you have a question about your car, you can give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Amy from San Diego.
Hi, Amy from San Diego.
Amy, how are you?
That's a traditional spelling, three letters?
Traditional spelling.
Okay.
Plain Jane.
I thought you said your name was Amy.
Plain Amy.
What's up, kid?
Well, I have a 1999 Isuzu Rodeo. And when it gets very, very cold here in the mornings, as it does in Southern California.
You mean like 65?
It gets as low as the mid-30s.
It does?
It does, at night.
Oh, suck it up, will you? Pardon us if we're not sympathetic.
I know. It's hard to sympathize with the paradise land we live in. But...
Yeah, well,
sure, rub it in some more. Go ahead. See if you've got a right answer.
Well, that's where Simon and Simon did all their work. San Diego. And it was always sunny and warm.
It always is.
And that's all my knowledge about San Diego comes from watching Simon and Simon.
Simon and Simon. That's good research.
Yeah, well, I do my, hey, you got to do your homework, you know?
Absolutely.
So what's the question?
So the question is, when it's very cold in the morning and my car's a manual, like a stick shift.
Yeah.
When I'm accelerating, mostly in first, second, and third gear, it makes this noise. And it comes at a regular interval, but the noise is not the same. It goes... So it kind of goes at the same interval, but it's not a constant same noise. It has a little tune to it.
Really?
Yeah.
And this happens as you're accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
Does it happen faster as you go faster?
Yes. And it sounds kind of just like a little quiet cat in my car.
Huh.
But there's no cats in it.
Well, not anymore, probably. So it
Well,
now,
it's been nice talking to you, Amy. where's it coming from? That's what you called us for, isn't it?
But you can't hear the noise unless you're moving.
Right. It doesn't happen when I'm idling.
Well, have you tried revving it?
I haven't tried revving it. I thought that was bad when your car's cold.
Well, it is. Unless you're doing research, like I do.
Okay.
Think of Simon and Simon. Research.
You called Simon and Simon. Maybe they can come by the house and give it a listen.
Maybe they can help me.
So it makes the noise as you're accelerating, but you don't know if it's related to the engine specifically or the drivetrain because you haven't done this experiment.
And it goes away?
Is there a chance that the noise is not coming from the front of the vehicle but the back?
Good question.
Ooh, it sounds like it's coming from in front of me.
Bad answer. All right.
And again, it only happens like in those first three gears. And by the time I get to fourth gear and I'm just coasting and not really accelerating, I don't so much hear it. And by the time the car's warm, when I get on the freeway, I don't hear it at all.
So are you with the car now? I mean, is the car readily accessible to you?
It's outside. It's parked outside.
Now, here's what you do. Put the phone down. Go outside and start the thing up and rev. Don't move the vehicle, but rev the engine.
Just a little bit.
As if you were driving it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, you can make believe you're driving. Put your foot on the clutch, leave it in neutral, put your foot on the clutch, give it some gas, take your foot off the clutch, and see if it makes any noise. We'll wait.
You'll wait?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll take another call.
Okay.
In the meantime.
But we won't cut you off.
Okay.
Yet.
We'll put you on hold.
All right.
Only if I have the wrong answer when I come back.
So you're on hold, and we'll be thinking about this. While you're doing your little experiment.
Yeah, we'll get some subliminal things going here.
Okay.
All right, we'll take another call.
I'll be right back.
Let us
know. All
right,
Amy. Cut her off, Louis.
Oh, we lost Amy? What a shame. What the heck was that?
I don't know. She's gonna give us all the information we need.
I'm going to tell you, it isn't going to do it.
I mean, I hate to go back to the old loose heat shield.
Choke pull-off.
Yeah. You may be your
All right, well, let's take a call.
All right, 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Christopher, and I'm calling from a gas station off of I-80 in Wyoming.
Oh, this doesn't sound good, Christopher.
Well, it's looking pretty windy and blowing snow out there right now.
It is, huh?
I have a physics automotive kind of question.
I took physics many times.
Yeah, same,
over and over
same course. Go ahead, we'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Well, we've been debating this amongst my brothers. If two vehicles are traveling in a line at freeway speeds, the rear vehicle, if it's drafting the first car, I know the rear vehicle gets better gas mileage for whatever physics kind of reason.
Sure, it's in the slipstream of the front vehicle.
The question is, does the front car, the one that's cutting through the air, does that actually have a negative impact on its gas mileage by having the car behind drafting it?
Is it, in other words,
sure,
is the car behind it sucking on it, making it even harder to drive ahead than it would if the car behind weren't there?
Absolutely, absolutely.
My brother says absolutely only with the kind of authority that a man who's taken physics four times. Only then.
Not
you...
just any physics. Freshman physics.
Freshman physics. 801 over and over again. And at least I had my good friend Professor Teaser say to me, "You will do it until you get it right."
Well, I just want to tell you, I don't know how many times I took it, but I did finally get an A.
You did. Excellent.
I did.
Well, you finally got it right.
But I think that the car in front is going to be... Imagine if you would, that there's some kind of physical connection between the two, like a tow rope.
I don't want to imagine that. That's not what's there. There's no physical connection
There is one molecule acting on another, and I think that there's a measure, albeit small, but I would be willing to bet there is a measurable diminution of the mileage of the front car by having the rear car being pulled along in its slipstream.
Well, let's think about what is it that's giving the advantage to the one in the back. It's driving along, and it doesn't have to push through this wall of air. Why is that a detriment to the first car?
Well, I think it's a detriment to the first car because it's...
Don't forget, you got an A.
I think there's more going on. I think that there is a... in this slipstream envelope, there is something that is encompassing the car in the back as well and pulling that along. And it's taking its toll on the front car in terms of its efficiency. And I think it would be a diminishing effect with each successive car. And if you had five cars trailing behind...
The first one would stop.
The first one...
Bull feathers!
No. I think, in fact, if there were several cars, I think the only one to really benefit might be the first one or two. And after that, it would be so negligible as to be inconsequential.
See, I unfortunately never got an A in physics of any kind.
Well, you didn't take the course four times.
Well, I took it twice.
Well, anyway, that's my position, and I know it's probably wrong, and I'm sticking with it. And next week we'll have our buddy Wolfgang on the show because he's on vacation now. He's in the islands, but we'll have him come on. And he's at the seat cover convention in Sandusky, Ohio.
Well, I have to say, Chris, it's a good question.
And what's your position on this, Chris? And what's your stake in this?
And what are your siblings?
Nobody had a conclusive answer. My guess was that you couldn't get something for nothing, that you must be in some form pulling the guy who's kind of cheating you behind.
So you're in my camp, Chris.
My older brother Steve thought that maybe the vehicle going is just creating that drag regardless, and the car behind is just within that drag.
And this is your elder brother.
Yes, so I have
and
to.
And one should always listen to his older brother. And that's my position as well. I agree with your older brother because I'm my brother's older brother.
No, but are you?
I'm also my own grandpa.
but I'm gonna tell you, this is a study in laminar flow too. This is not a simple physics.
Laminar.
Flow.
I got
Chris, we'll talk to Wolfgang next week, and we'll have a real answer for you. But a heck of a question, man.
Well, thank you very much.
And you would think a couple of guys, both of whom graduated from the most prestigious university of higher technological knowledge on Massachusetts Avenue in Cambridge, would have some idea.
We do. It may be the wrong idea, but we have some idea.
We would have some theory. We would have something.
Boy, you know what I could buy on? Partial credit. Was of a partial credit, I would have been dead in the water. Anyway, we'll find out for you, Chris. Rest assured, you can.
And we'll put it on our website as well.
Thank you very much.
See you later.
With diagrams.
Bye-bye.
Oh,
God.
Brother. All right. Is Amy still on the line?
Still here.
Hey, Amy.
God. Hi.
So, you went out?
You tried to get rid of me.
No, Amy.
We tried.
Yes, we did. So, you went out. You started it up. You put your foot on the clutch. You raised your foot off the clutch as you were giving it gas, like you were driving.
Just like
and I'm
I was
guessing
drawing.
That nothing happened.
Nothing happened. It's warm today.
It's warm.
So even like when I just started up the thermometer, little gauge is already in the middle. It's already so warm today.
I have a thought.
Oh, good.
Let's hear it.
All the time that this is happening, you're driving along.
Mm-hmm.
And you're steering.
Yes.
Tommy thinks the problem is coming from the power steering.
Power steering.
Could the noise be coming from inside the passenger compartment?
Sure.
Could it be, like, right there at the steering wheel?
I don't think it's right under my hands, but it could be down the column
a
bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
We often see this in the cold, frozen north where we live.
The tundra area.
That the plastic that is around the steering column.
It's the right kind of sound.
Will make that same kind of... But it requires that you turn the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Which you are often doing, but
doesn't explain speeding up when she speeds up.
Doesn't explain that.
Unless when you speed up, you do more steering.
That could be.
Well, here's the test.
Do you do a lot of turns and things when you first start out, the first 10 minutes of driving?
Not so many, but I like the road is kind of uneven, so and no one is ever coming in the other direction, so I kind of go around the bumps and stuff.
I'm
not making 90-degree turns, but I'm making little adjustments.
Adjustments.
Right, and if you do those little adjustments until the passenger compartment warms up, you can get these little...
That's exactly the...
As brilliant as this idea was, I don't like it.
Oh, no.
Well, I don't like it because you said as you go faster, it will go...
But it never gets to where it's like constant or...
Well, here was my feeling, that you have a ball joint or a tie rod end that needs lubrication, and it can make exactly that kind of noise, and it will be more pronounced when it's cold, and it will go away when the thing is driven and it warms up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in either case... You should be able to, next cold morning, whenever that happens to be.
Tomorrow.
You should be able to get into this thing early in the morning. In fact, here's what you do. Set your alarm clock for 4 a.m. Okay?
Yeah.
So tomorrow you're going to get up at 4 a.m. and you're going to run out and you're going to start the thing up.
And you're not going to drive.
But you're going to turn the wheel back and forth.
Okay.
And you're going to hear the noise.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm betting on that.
And that will tell us that it's either coming from the steering column, which is inside the passenger compartment, or from one of the steering components,
mm-hmm.
which is more serious and needs to be addressed.
Oh.
But then you can leave it someplace and have them check the front end.
Okay.
But we would love to know if, in fact, what we just said is going to happen.
I'll let you know.
I'm sure you will.
We'll keep you on hold. 4 a.m. there will be 7 a.m. here. Let me give you my brother's number.
Good luck, Amy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
We may have bailed out of that one. Wow.
What? Tommy, a thought.
A thought.
That's all it takes, see? You can do that every week.
I can? It hurts so much.
You should try harder.
Did you see all that smoke? Oh, man.
All right, before we get to the new puzzler, we're going to pause and take a short break.
Yeah, and when we come back, we'll have sports, the lottery number, news you can use, and my brother will dress up as the weather girl.
I thought it was your turn to dress up as the weather girl. I do it every week. We'll be right back.
Out on the highway in my hot rod Ford, talking to the devil and praying to the Lord that the devil won't take me, and the Lord will save my soul while my hot rod's beating out the rock and roll to the hot rod boogie.
Hot rod boogie.
To the hot rod boogie.
Hot rod boogie.
To the hot rod boogie, shaking to the rock and roll.
And even though the FCC's lousy program emergency hotline is flooded with calls every time we say it, this is NPR.
Ha, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new puzzler.
Okay, go ahead.
Two Bedouins are crossing the desert on their camels.
It's good already.
In the early morning hours.
I love it.
When they come across a suitcase in the sand that's partially open, stuffed with clothes.
You talk about obfuscating.
No, no, this...
I know that this has nothing...
No, it does. This
has nothing to do with the question.
It has everything to do with it.
I mean, when you heard this, it was probably two guys were walking down the street in New York City, and they see a suitcase, and you chased it to do better with crossing the desert.
No, no. See, you're reading too much into it.
I love it already. Go ahead. Okay. Okay, I'm ready.
You all right?
Two Bedouins. Yeah.
And they come across a suitcase in the sand, but interestingly, they see no tracks of any kind surrounding it.
Ah.
They continue on their journey, heading for the oasis.
What, they leave the suitcase there?
Well, they look at it, and it was Western clothing, oddly enough.
Ah. Oh, okay. So they just opened it up, looked at it.
They looked at it, and they said there was no interest to them.
Right, okay.
And they go on, and they find another suitcase in the sand. Mm-hmm. And the same thing. It's open, and clothes are strewn about it, and they continue their journey thinking of nothing but this suitcase. A little while later, they find in the sand a...
They're in a hurry to get to the oasis because they got dates there.
Dates and, no, and figs. Figs. Dates and figs at the oasis.
I'm sorry.
Come on. I lost my train. So they come across a second suitcase. Again, the same thing. No tracks in
Got
the
it.
Suitcase. Mm-hmm. They come across a camera in the sand. Same thing.
Uh-huh.
A video camera.
Ooh.
A little while later, they find shoes, hats, pants,
mm-hmm.
shirts. They continue on their journey. A little distance later, they see a man lying face down, obviously dead, in the sand, grasping a piece of straw.
Yeah.
What happened? Can you reconstruct the crime? This man is obviously dead.
Oh, it's a crime, not an accident.
Maybe it isn't a crime. Can you tell what happened? What's the most likely scenario?
A straw?
He's holding a straw in his hand.
Wow.
Well, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or a 1,000-watt surround sound system with subwoofer.
Yeah, okay.
And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our very fair city.
Ma 02238. Or, of course, you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Jessica from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Scottsdale.
Scottsdale. That's a nice place in the winter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 70 today.
Yeah.
Oh, shut up.
I have a pretty general question for you.
Yeah. Okay.
When I go to the mechanic or even to get my tires looked at or changed, the mechanics tend to speak over my head to my boyfriend, even though I'm paying for the repairs and it's my car.
Yeah.
How can I command respect in a situation like that when I only have a medium knowledge about cars?
Yeah. Mm.
Jeez. I mean, does your boyfriend, when they direct their attention to him, act as if he owns the car or as if he's responsible for the car?
No, he's just polite, but he pretty much just nods and smiles. He knows less about cars than I do, if that's possible.
But, I mean, have you discussed this with him?
Yes.
And has he, like, offered to say, it's not my car?
Yeah, once in a while he has said that, but he's a very polite person, so he feels uncomfortable, I think, saying something like that.
And he's probably a little intimidated by the fellow who's talking about the car. Yeah, no, we're very careful at our shop to address the person who we believe owns the car.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Are we?
Yeah, we...
Do you have those customer training sessions with the lads, as we call them?
Yes, we do.
I can see it now.
It usually starts with, "You stupid!"
Hey, Ray! Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. Well, it takes a while to condition people to actually speak to women about cars, but we have, I would say, more than half of my customers are women, so we always make sure, even if their boyfriends or husbands are there, that we talk to them. And I think you need to politely get your boyfriend to tell this fellow that it's Jessica's car. Why don't you explain it to her? Because I don't know anything about cars.
Wow, that's a big step for Jeremy.
Yeah, what's his name?
Jeremy.
Tony.
Tony.
You think Tony's ego can take it?
I think so.
We a couple of years ago, maybe less, maybe yesterday, I don't remember when it was, we got a letter from a guy who was, I guess he was a college professor doing research. He sent out a female with a car, and she brought the car to various shops, and later sent out a guy with the same car and the same problems. And in almost every single case, the woman was charged more for the repair than the guy was. And he was actually going to extend this and do a bigger study. We never heard from him again. I think somebody killed him. But it does tell you that mechanics do treat women quite differently
I don't think you can say it's just mechanics. I think it's builders and people involved in any kind of trade where they think it's the fellow who's fixing your washing machine.
Right.
Well, I mean, it used to be that when people came to my house to fix things, they would talk to me.
Until they realized what a moron you were.
When they realized what a moron I am, if they call on the phone, let me talk to your wife. They know that I don't know nothing. And so they've learned. Mm. So it's possible to fix this. And you can train the people who are involved, the tradesmen and workmen, because all they have to realize is that the guy is a moron. You can almost make that assumption every time that the guy's a moron, because you'll be right most of the time.
But that doesn't solve the problem of getting ripped off.
But what it means is that your boyfriend has to suck it up and do more than just be a nice guy.
Why does the boyfriend go with you in the first place?
Well, his job is such that he is gone 1 month and here 1 month. So he's usually hanging out with me when he's here.
Oh, yeah. So you can't get rid of him when he's here.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. He's here when he's here.
Right. And so when you take the car, he takes the car. But he can wait outside, you know.
Right.
Well, on the other hand, his presence may save you money. Think about, would you rather be treated with dignity or save money?
That's tough.
That's a good question, isn't it?
It is a tough question.
But you have the choice. It's nice to know you have the choice. If you want to save money, you bring him in. And if you want to be treated with dignity and respect, you'll ask him to stay outside.
Well, here's what you do. When you go in, you ask the mechanic, you say, how much is it you think this is going to cost? If he tells you it's going to be hundreds, Tony, could you come in?
This guy says it's going to cost $350 for this tire. Is that a lot? And Tony has to agree all the time. That's too much.
But I think you have to get Tony to say, could you please talk to Jessica about this? It's her car, and I'll be in the waiting room.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
It's a tough world. See you, Jessica.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
My wife doesn't bring me anywhere. I wonder why that is.
Because you're not house trained. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Scott from Antioch, California.
Hi, Scott.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, we're great, man. What's up?
I've got a 93 Volkswagen Eurovan, and it's been making a squealing noise off and on for about the past year. And it's a manual transmission. I think it's the throwout bearing. It makes a noise that kind of goes like this.
Wait, does it make this noise when your foot is on the clutch or off?
Only when my foot is off, so when the clutch is engaged. And it usually does this at a cold start, and then it goes away after about the first mile or two. In the last month or so, it's been changing where it hasn't made that noise the first mile or two, but it starts like 3 to 4 miles out and then goes for a mile or two.
It's not the throttle bearing.
Well, it could be.
Unlikely.
When it's making the noise, you say your foot is off the clutch.
That's right. It's engaged, so it's I'm driving, moving.
You're driving. You hear this noise.
Right.
And when does it go away?
Yeah, it goes away after about a mile or two.
But you can make it go away by stepping on the clutch, too.
Yeah, you can hear it, like, spinning down, and it goes away.
Spinning down, huh? All right. How important is it for you to have an answer?
Right now.
Either right now, or that isn't painful.
Well, what I'm really after is I've talked to the local shop that I take it to, Werner there, and he says it's the throw-out bearing, and you can let it go until you either start having trouble with the clutch or until you just can't stand the noise. It's continuous.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with Werner that it, in fact, is the throw-out bearing.
I don't agree with Werner.
Well, I knew that. And
I think when you do need a clutch and you go replace all that stuff, you're going to still have the noise because I think it's the front shaft of the transmission.
Oh, that would be ugly. That would be ugly. But I think on this car, this has a self-adjusting clutch. And this bearing is always making contact with the fingers on the pressure plate. And that's why when you start the engine cold, that bearing is just dry and it's sticky. And when you first start the thing and that bearing spins, it's making the noise until it finally loosens up. Everything heats up a little bit.
But why does it go away if he steps on the clutch?
Well, because when you load it up, it'll often go away.
I don't like it.
I know you don't like it. And that's the reason I like it so much, that my brother doesn't like it. But I agree with Werner, and I trust your guy has checked the transmission oil level.
Yeah.
And it's full.
Yeah, that's good.
I would drive it. The only downside of waiting is that it's apt to break sometime when you're out in the middle of nowhere.
What kind of warning am I going to get before it craters?
None.
None.
You'll
absolutely
get no warning, and I would, but I don't know.
You'll step on the clutch someday, and you will not be able to shift it. But
okay.
if you think you can drive it without the clutch, well, you can. I mean, it's possible to put it in gear, you know, and step on the clutch, and which really doesn't work.
Is it pretty flat there in Antioch?
No. I go up to, like, to the Sierras and stuff like that with it.
No, that would be very bad.
Well, if you broke it when you were up there, it would be all right.
Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It depends how risk, you know, averse you are. And if you're risk averse, then I would say go ahead and fix it tomorrow. Otherwise, if you're looking for a little adventure in your life, which you clearly are because you're driving a Eurovan.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I would say drive it till it breaks.
That's what I would do.
See you, Scott.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, it's Nancy from St. Paul.
Hi, Nancy.
Nancy.
Hi.
Long time no see.
I know. Get you never bus. Call, you never write.
Don't know how.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, now, St. Paul is right next to Minneapolis, is it not?
Yes.
You wouldn't happen to know my friend Willis Block. No, all right, never mind.
No, I don't think so.
He gets lonely, you know, and I have to mention his name once in a while.
Yeah, I understand.
What's up?
Okay, here's the deal. I've got this little cute Miata that I only drive in the summertime. And in the winter, I put it in the garage, and I put the top up, and I cover it with a little Miata cozy with little ball fringe and little Dutch girls around the edge.
Miata cozy. Oh, I love it.
That's cute.
So what happened is this year it was really, really warm until late, like after Thanksgiving, and so I was driving around and didn't get around to putting the top up and the cozy on until like after Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to put the top up, and I can't get it up all the way.
Because it's cold.
Yeah. So I don't know what I can do to get the top to click.
Got a hair dryer?
Got a hair dryer, yeah.
Take it with you to the garage.
Uh-huh.
Heat up the top.
It's a bigger top than the hair dryer.
Yeah, I know, but you want to just heat up any part of the top.
Okay.
The reason it won't close is because the plastic that the top is made out of
yeah.
is stiff.
Yeah.
Because it's cold.
Is there a tannerama near your house?
Oh, which?
You know, one of those tanning beds.
You can drive right in.
Yeah, but I have to drive with the top down, see, and it's January.
I know. I mean, all you have to do is somehow...
You know, you have to go to the Mall of America.
Oh, yeah,
do they have an
right.
indoor parking facility that's heated? A fancy hotel.
A fancy hotel. Okay.
Ah.
Yeah, I like that.
Is there one nearby?
Yeah, but see, I can't drive it there.
Why not?
Because it's January and the top is down.
So what?
I would get frostbite.
Well, you don't have far to go.
Well... I don't know.
People will think you're such a daring do. They'll say, look at that, Nancy. Isn't she a
Isn't
wacko?
She a nut?
I know. I'm real sensitive.
No, as long as there's no snow in the ground, you can drive the thing. And there is no snow, right?
We got plenty of snow. Yeah. It's January.
No, but the roads are clean. You pick a day when the roads have been cleaned.
Okay.
You blast out of your parking space with this thing. You drive to a nice heated hotel garage.
Yeah. You only have to be there for an hour.
Okay.
You go into the little tea room.
You go to the Russian tea room,
and you have some tea and crumpets.
I like it.
And when you go back downstairs to the parking garage, you'll pull up the top, and it'll close just as neatly as can be.
Okay.
And if you don't want to do that, get the hair dryer, and the hair dryer will do it.
Right.
Too.
And by June, it'll be warm enough for it to go up. See you, Nancy.
Yeah, okay.
See you later, kid.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've evaporated another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Vladivostok vegan vichyssoise and vinaigrette victory vamp, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marjan Overa. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatello Nobody. And our solicitor of new ideas is Obi Quiet. Our sexual harassment investigator is Hank Pankey. Our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Outavindo. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian All Been Heard Before. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our construction manager is Dustin Dubry. Dustin Dubry, you get it? Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, as always, is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the shivering professors in Spring Tweed in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And above all, don't drive like my brother.
And below all, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1403, download classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, a topic on which many would say I'm one of the nation's leading experts.
Oh, beard-based food storage?
No, how to keep your car running forever.
I suppose so. These days, a lot of folks are planning to hold on to their cars an extra year or two.
Or 10.
So we've written up our best advice on keeping your car running long-term.
Rule number one, never let my brother work on it.
Or let my brother live in it.
How to keep your car running forever, our best advice, available all week at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR's structural engineer calls for removal of a key load-bearing beam just under our studio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.